Let's see. Okay. So while we're still waiting for people to join, type present plus if you can to make sure you're added to the attendees list, just like I'm doing right now. And let's see. I think I'll go ahead, even though it still seems like we're lacking some people, I'll go ahead and do the agenda review. We have a lot to cover today. In fact, I'm not sure we'll get to all of it. Okay, so for agenda review, we'll do IP note, call notes, scribe selection. So if you feel like scribing today, please be thinking about that. Introductions and reintroductions, announcements and reminders. We'll do a few action items to for this week, and then the bulk of it, which is the part that I'm not sure we'll get to. So three items to discuss. So first one, I wanted to review the work item process drafts, the TLDR section. So we had a review of the work item process before. We got a lot of feedback. It's not very easy to understand. So this introduction section should make that easier. So we want to discuss some things related to that. And then related to that, we will be working through repairing work items and then discussing proposed work items. So I expect that we won't be able to get to all of that. And then some of the subsequent ones, we might need to spread into subsequent weeks. The key thing is that we want to get more feedback on the work item process summary to see if that's making more sense to people so we can start moving ahead. Okay, IP note, anyone can participate in these calls. However, if you've not agreed to the group's IP policy, we cannot consider substantive contributions. Call notes, these minutes and an audio recording of everything said on this call are archived at this location. See, there's some fun activity happening in IRC. We use IRC to cue speakers during the call as well as to take minutes. All attendees should type present plus, as Moses has just done, to get your name on the attendee list in the transcript. In IRC, type Q plus, no space in between, to add yourself to the queue with an optional reminder. Q plus to mention did spec needs better SEO. The two part is required. If you're not on IRC, simply ask to be put on the queue. And lastly, please be brief so the rest of the queue can get a chance to chime in. You can always Q plus again. Okay, now for the scribe selection. Do we have any volunteers? Okay, I'm going to start going through this list here. And I'll try to save time by skipping past people who don't appear to be present. Benjamin Young, are you able to scribe?
He just scribed in the VC call, so he's probably resting his fingers.
Yes, okay. Christopher Weber? I'm skipping over the Dans that aren't here. The David. David Lane, are you able to scribe? Drummond.
I can try and keep up. I'll do my best. I'm not the best scribe, but I'll give it a shot.
Thank you very much, Drummond.
You bet.
It's much easier when you aren't running the meeting, Drummond.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Okay. All right.
Okay, now for introductions and reintroductions. I'm going to skip over the people we already established aren't here. Mike.
Sorry for joining late. This is.
Hello. Go ahead.
Sorry for joining late. This is Bill Barnhill.
Oh, actually, I'm sorry. I forgot the. I was skipping right to reintroduction. So I'm sorry. Could you? I didn't catch your name, and I accidentally skipped over the introduction. Who is calling in?
This is Bill Barnhill.
Oh, okay, got you. Hi, Bill.
Hi.
Let's see. I think we had you introduced recently. Any new members or any new people to the call that would like to introduce themselves? I actually see someone that I'll call on if they're able. Isaac Potka, are you able to introduce yourself?
Yeah. Hi, this is Isaac. I've been on a few of these. So I work with Bloom, and we're an implementer of some of the verifiable credentials stuff and also just some of the DID spec stuff. So yep, just listening into.
Thank you. Let's see. For reintroductions. Mike Lauder, are you on the call? Still looking through.
I guess I'll go. Rohan Do, One Cosmos, and we are also in the process of actually launching a public git resolver as well.
I'm sorry, who is this?
Rohan Pinto from One Cosmos.
Okay, I'm not sure I caught that.
I'll type it in.
For...
Rohan Pinto.
Thank you, Joe. Great, thank you. Okay, so let's move to announcements and reminders. So we try to keep this up to date here. One second. Okay, so here's what we have going on now. The dedicated DID calls on Thursdays. Still going on, and they are in a Zoom room. You can find it at that location, but also note that it's here. And I think that the time I have on that is out of date. It says time is 1 to 2:30 p.m. Pacific, or that would be 8 p.m. UTC. And let's see. Anyone have any clarifications on that? The DID calls are still going on every week, correct?
Yes, they are, and that is the correct time, and it will happen again this Thursday. And be there or forever right off the spec.
Great, thank you. One thing I want to check, is my sound clear to people? The connection sounds a little choppy to me.
It does sound just a little bit choppy, Kim, but otherwise it's okay.
Okay. Okay, keep going. Let me know. Please let me know if it gets unbearable. I'll see if I need to switch. Okay. Let's see. So next we have Rebooting Web of Trust 9 in Prague, which will be September 3rd through 6th. And let's see, you can find more information here. Sorry for those numbers at the beginning. They weren't meant to be pasted. TPAC 2019 will be September 16th through 20th in Japan. Is there anyone going to that in this that's in this call right now? Okay, we'll probably send an email. Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say Brent Zindel from Everett is going, but I don't see him on the call right now.
Okay.
So this is Dan Burnett. I'll be at TPAC.
Oh, great. Okay, so we may be reaching out to some folks about that. Joe, can you? Joe, you're up.
Yeah, I just, Marcus, I noticed you were here. Is there going to, how does the Vienna pre-rebooting possible event look? Is that going to happen? Might be worth letting folks know.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, we are planning something on September 1st, so just the day before rebooting Web of Trust starts in Prague. We're planning a pre-meetup in Vienna, meet the local community and some of the SSI and DAD projects that are happening here. I don't have any details yet, so we don't have a page yet and we don't have an agenda, but I will share it with the group when we have it.
Very cool. So for those of you heading to rebooting, consider heading to Vienna 2 days early. That would be fun if you could make it.
Yeah, so we'll basically plan a day on the 1st, September 1st, and then collectively take the train to Prague in the morning of the 2nd, so we'd be there in time for all the Prague events and not miss anything there.
Cool.
Okay, so the reason I asked about TPAC and who's going to be there, so the chairs, we have an overdue action item to look into booking space, and so, but none of us can afford to go, so we first wanted to check to see if anyone from the community was going and was interested in speaking out on anything CCG related. So we'll be reaching out separately to find out if there's anything we should be doing there. And Drummond, sorry, one more time, who is it from Evernym that may be going?
Brent, B-R-E-N-T, Zindel.
Gotcha. Yes. Okay, perfect.
This is Ken. I'll be going as well. This is Ken from Sovereign.
Excellent.
And actually, just to be clear, Kim, if a DID working group is created before TPAC, then there will be a DID working group meeting at TPAC.
Okay, gotcha. Okay.
A space has been reserved for it, or rather, I requested that a space be reserved for it, assuming the working group is created before then.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm just taking note of that. Okay. Thank you. Let's see. And lastly, for upcoming meeting agendas. So one note, we're trying to keep that announcements page update with upcoming meeting agendas just so people can plan more in advance. So we haven't had a lot, well, one, we expect to have a lot of, I'll call it fallout, but that's not the word I'm looking for, from when the DID side groups are done meeting. We'll have a lot to discuss there. And until then, I expect that we'll have a few sort of more follow-ups with the work item process / repair or new work items that we're talking about now. But also we want to bring that up because if there's any topic you'd like to propose for a future meeting agenda, reach out to the chairs or just on the mailing list because we can start allocating some time in advance. Okay, let's move on to progress on action items. Okay, so I'm going to break the usual format we've been doing and call on some specific ones that I've reviewed in advance. So the first one is uncompleted work items. So this is a small one. This is a good first issue. We're trying to identify action items that would be easy candidates for people to get involved. So that references a completed work items list that we have that's very under updated. And so if anyone would be interested in looking through the group's past work items and specifications that have rolled out into other working groups, this would be a good candidate to take. And obviously, this is as a first work item candidate, this is something that, you know, the chairs would be happy to provide some mentorship suggestions on, you know, where to look. Let's see. Number 79. Okay. I am going to call on some combination of people, specifically Manu on this. So Manu has someone working on a DID test suite, and he sent something to the mailing list mentioning there's 83 untestable normative statements called out. I'm going to send the link to that. So I think that, one, that's great news, but two, I think Drummond mentioned that he wasn't aware that normative statements are supposed to be testable. So there's a few things to discuss I wanted to queue up. I don't think we can get to the whole thing, but I wanted to figure out if we need someone to, you know, what our next steps are. Do we need to, you know, just call this out as in scope as part of the DID working group? This is the mail that that Manu sent. Manu, you're up.
Sorry, I just put some food in my mouth. right. So the good news is that Andrew Jones has started on a DID test suite. The reason that we're doing that this early is because it bit us in the verifiable credentials work, and we're trying to kind of get a lead on that particular thing. So the good news is that, you know, there will be a DID test suite in short order, maybe in the next 2 weeks or so, and then people can start doing implementations against it. It'll mostly be data model tests, so like verifying that a DID is in the correct syntax, and then verifying whether or not a DID document is valid or not. And then we'll continue to add to that. Right now, we identified 26 normative statements in the specification. So counting all the positive and negative tests for that, that's probably like 60 tests, which is like, you know, it's a good start to a test suite. The other thing that we identified are like 83 normative statements that were some variation of it may be okay or it is totally untestable and we need to change it. So to go to the first comment by Drummond, normative statements, typically it's a judgment call in the working group on whether or not they want to make that normative statement testable or not. You will almost always get objections from some company out there that says, this thing isn't testable, remove it from the specification. So we have, you know, in the spec today, we have 83 variations of that. And if we were to go into, you know, like what we're doing with the verifiable credential spec now into a candidate recommendation phase with that many normative statements, it would take a very long time to resolve each one of those things. So they break down into a couple of categories. The first category, and this is the easiest one, are normative statements around what DID method specs should do. And those things don't need to be automatically testable, right? They do need to be human testable. Like, for example, if we say a DID method specification must express how DIDs are created, then that is something a human being can read, and then they can go to the specification and see that it's there. So those types of specifications are totally fine. We should keep them. We may want to consolidate them in the DID specification. There are other ones which are kind of gray area, which is, you know, stuff like you should use a decentralized ledger to implement, I'm paraphrasing, but you should use a decentralized ledger to implement DIDs. That's not testable because you don't, what's the test to see if a system that you're talking to is really decentralized behind the scenes, right? So it's impossible to tell whether a system is centralized or decentralized. And so one comment that we could get is like, this is not testable, rip it out of there. And then, we say, well, it's something we want in there. And the commenter just says, no, it's not testable, take it out. And then that conversation eats up a ton of time. And the question is, how strongly do we feel about that statement that we're willing to eat up like a week to 2 to 3 weeks discussing that one, out of 83 items. And then there are other statements. So there's stuff that's clearly like, okay, it's about DID method specifications. There's the second class, which is like, it's questionable whether or not it's testable or not. The third one is like, it's clearly untestable, and we're trying to push a normative requirement, like a technical requirement that cannot be automatically tested, and it can't even be, tested by a human being. And those statements tend to be about more like philosophical things that the spec should or shouldn't do. So anyway, there are 83 of those. We have classified them. We can go down them. Talking about those things in a DID working group is totally legitimate. Like, we should probably do that. That email that was sent out to the mailing list was just a heads up to everyone, like, hey, this is what we're finding so far. And that's it. Back over to you, Kim.
Thank you. And I want to follow up because you mentioned in your email that you just wanted to get on everyone's radar, basically. And it sounds like a lot of that we can talk about during the working group. But I wanted to see if there's any follow-up we need to be doing. And I think that was partially part of Drummond's question as well. Any suggestions for what we should be doing in the meantime? And actually, Marcus is on the queue.
I wanted to say there's an open pull request that proposes to change some words like may, must, should from lowercase to uppercase. I was wondering if somebody could clarify the exact difference from using those words in lowercase and uppercase, and whether that is relevant for this issue of normative testable requirements. Like, if we, for example, if we changed uppercase must to lowercase must, what does that change, and the other way around?
Thank you. And Manny's added himself to the queue again to respond to that. Joe, you're up. Joe Andrew?
Joe, you may be muted.
Sorry about that. Go ahead and let Manu go. My item is about the new task force. I just want to share with the group, so if you can get that in the agenda at the right part.
Yeah. Okay, great. So, yes, I'll call on you after this part. Manu, you're up twice.
Right. So, to answer Marcus's question, lowercase must, should, may is not a normative statement. So if it's lowercase, it's not important. It's not something that you expect people to test. Uppercase is normative, specifically must statements. The things that you see being tested are uppercase musts. Shoulds are sometimes not tested. Mays are rarely ever tested. So changing from a lowercase to an uppercase must changes it from something that we don't expect to test to something that we're absolutely going to test, and then vice versa. What we find in many working groups is even when you do the difference between lowercase and uppercase, people don't notice the nuance. It's a very specky, like, standards thing. So what we do is we change the language entirely. So we might change like should do this to a might do this, like a lowercase should do this or a lowercase must do this. We change it to a lowercase might do this, and that just makes it clear that we're not trying to say anything normative there. So there, you know, we may end up making some of those changes, and that's what I suggest, is that the editors go through and change everything that they don't intend to be a normative statement. Anything that is not a capital must, capital should, or capital may. The language should not only be lowercase, but it should be changed to something like might or can or could or that sort of language. And I think that's it. I forget why I put myself in the queue. Could we do? What we could do is, I mean, it's just PRs against the spec, and we should probably handle this in the separate DID calls. My hope is that we let the editors do their job and clean up some of these statements. It's a bit more difficult. I don't know. I mean, it may be that we just need we need to create a Google Doc, which we've already done. We'll put in all the statements, and then we will mark the ones that people want to keep as normative. And so maybe Drummond, Marcus, myself, and then anybody else that has an opinion should go through that list and just see if there are easy ones where we could change it to reduce that 83 number to something, you know, more that we can, that we can probably handle a bit easier. Like 20 is a good range to get in a working group with. So yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that sounds great. I'm making a note in the issue that we do that. Joe, are you ready now?
Sure. So at the last DID call, I asked for a few editors to help with the rubrics document, which will flow into the DID working group, but we've already identified it and started working on it. Got a couple of folks interested. And so we're going to create an informal task force, which will meet every week, at least long enough to get a sense of the scope of that rubrics document and what we want to do with it, and get that work kicked off. So anyone who's interested in joining that task force, let me know. I'll be picking a time, and we'll start those calls soon, hopefully next week. But we don't have a time yet, so it may not be next week.
Thank you. And the last action item we have before we get to the main topic, let's see. I think I need to call in someone. I'm not sure who, maybe Christopher. Okay, so this one has to do with the registry's meta process, which, so this touches on the meat of the meeting today, because we talk a lot about one type of work item process, but we have little documentation on ongoing action item or ongoing work item, sorry, and registries is one of those. And so as shown here, Manu has started up a process by which any registry could be started and maintained by a group. I understand that this is of interest more broadly at W3C, so there's an email about some group that's focusing on this specifically, and if we want to suggest our process that we're coming up with as a broader W3C process. Christopher, you started that email. Do you mind speaking to that?
Sure. So, to be clear, this is this challenge of doing registries is somewhat caused by the fact that working groups have time limits. So, for instance, the Verifiable Claims Working Group is facing a time limit where they're a little over 2 years old, and they have to finish, or else it's not a standard. And then when they're finished, sometimes there are these sort of ongoing registries, lists, things of that nature that need to be maintained in some fashion. And it's been proposed that the CCG, as a community group, which does not have an end, is perpetual. could serve as that particular to manage that particular function, and we have agreed that we will do that, and we've begun to do that. The thing is that there is a group at the W3C called the Process Working Group, which is charged with how does W3C work, and and makes proposals to modify how W3C as a whole has worked. And they have discussed, if you look at their list history, evergreen working groups. These would be working groups that would be specifically chartered to basically be perpetual. And I basically inquired with them, does that mean that groups that want to do the registry stuff, should that be part of the evergreen process or something else? They said, well, that's really interesting. We didn't really, we've discussed registries before, but we didn't really think of it in the context of this evergreen stuff. And some people said, yeah, it should be in the evergreen stuff. Some other people said, no, it should be something new, a new process that W3C has for doing these registries. All in all, this will take, a couple of years probably to completely shake out, but their meetings are at 7 a.m. in the morning on the East Coast, and I'm the only one who's kind of monitoring what they're doing right now, so I was kind of hoping that, somebody who was, more East Coast and understood the perils and promise of W3C process could periodically talk with them about this. Otherwise, we risk whatever we do in the CCG basically not being a useful lesson for them. That being said, we still don't completely have our own working group, registries process figured out. So that's it.
Thanks, Christopher. And I don't see anyone on the queue, so we'll move to the main topic. But one thing to keep in mind keep that in mind as we move to the next part, because it will demonstrate that the sort of ongoing work items are still under development right now. So we'll be coming back to that. So the next thing we'll cover is the simplified credential community group work item process draft. And I want to call your attention so this is the same document we reviewed a few weeks ago. I may need to update that link. Is anyone having problems getting into that? Okay, I think I'm starting to see people on it. So there's a TLDR section, and this is the one that I wanted to call attention to. What I'm hoping is that people will find this a lot simpler and add context for the remaining parts of the document. So we're going to spend as much time as we need to kind of make sure this makes sense. So let's start in with the work item process, the 40,000-foot view, basically. So this is the process that applies to any work item, whatever, that comes up in the credentials community group. You have a state diagram. I'm hoping that this format is okay for people. But so for any work item, registry, did spec, whatever, its flow will look exactly like this 40,000-foot view state diagram. So, you start in proposal, and details of that are discussed in the later section. We'll get to that. So, the adoption process is the process by which, the proposer is gathering support in the community, discussing it with the credentials community group. And then the condition for moving to an actual work item, which can be one of two types, which we'll get into, is basically there's no principled objections. There's been discussion for at least a week, and this vague chairs determine it's appropriate. I think that that one is essentially something that's kept in for, to make sure it's basically in charter. I can't think of any really good examples because I think that in general, those come from the community. So I think that's, there's not much to say there unless we want to get into that some more. So after adoption, there's a fork. Is it an ongoing community draft? And an ongoing community draft, there's several examples of that, but one of them is a registry. So just keep that in mind as your working example. So on the left side of that is something like a registry. And the idea is that it will just keep going until the chairs have noticed and pinged the group, hey, there's no action going on it. So then that will become closed after some period of inactivity. On the other hand, we have the more typical work items, and that might be the DID spec, a MIRA, something like that, that's going to go to a deliverable. And that has its own process, which we'll drill into. So its condition to move to being closed is either that it's completed or just due to inactivity, the chairs decide to close that. I'm going to check the queue before moving along. Okay, I don't see anyone. So next, I want to drill into these ongoing community drafts, community report drafts. So those are the two types of work items. So the ongoing ones, again, think of an example of that as a registry. Community report draft, again, think of examples of those as a MIRA, DID spec, something like that. So, I had that section down here. So this is just showing some subtypes of each work item type. The subtypes are the ovals, and then in the comments next to them are some specific examples. So looking at the ongoing community draft again, one specific subtype is a registry. DID method registry is one. Conformance test suite is another subtype. That might be the DID test suite. On the other side, the community report drafts, there's three subtypes. Those are community specifications, community commentary, and community note. So community specification, a specific example of that is the DID spec. And for community note, a specific example of that is DID primer. And details of what those are mentioned in subsequent sections. One of the goals of this is to sort of provide context of the rest of the document. And actually, as we're wrapping this up, we'll provide links to sort of jump into the details. But, something like community note, DID primer, that's not something we expect to move on to a W3C working group, whereas DID spec is. So for now, without getting into all the details, just think of divisions like that. Okay, so now let's move into the 20,000-foot view. So, again, we had that very high-level work item state diagram above. Now we're drilling in to, within those two types of work items, what is their process? So on the left, we have ongoing community draft, and notice there's no details in there. And that's to touch on what Christopher was just talking about. We have some proposals, but those are new. That's something that's of interest to the broader W3C group. So this doesn't have any details on it right now. But the other types of reports community report drafts. So, for example, did Spec, Amira, did Primer. We do have a very well-known process for those, and those are called out in this green-blue section over here. And so, again, we'll provide, we'll have links to subsequent parts, but effectively we have these phases of rough draft, unreleased draft, and that's essentially when the editors decide to move to GitHub. I'm going to come back to that in a little bit. Release draft is when the editors, basically whenever the editors decide it's ready and tag the repo with a git release number. And then a published draft happens after the editors have ensured everyone's signed the IP release and they've requested the chairs to publish. And then it moves to final report stage after the chairs have vetted and community W3C staff approve. Now, any of these can exit early just due to inactivity. But either way, these are intended, the community report drafts are intended to have to be finite, unlike ongoing community drafts. Before I get into some details there, let's look at some examples to hopefully make that more specific. So I've dated this as of May 29th, 2019, some specific work items and where they are in the work item process. So we're going to take a few examples and look at where they are in that state diagram. Okay, so on the left side, again, we have the DID method registry, and that's, you know, intended to be an ongoing thing. On the right side, we have DID Primer, and so that is a community report draft, specifically a community note. And that is currently in the unreleased draft phase. So note that means it's actually in GitHub, but the editors have not decided it's ready enough to tag it with a git release number. Further along in the process, we have the DID spec. And that is a community specification type of work item. And so that one, you know, it's, wait, is it public? Yeah, published draft. Wait, is that release draft? I am actually forgetting now. My diagram may be wrong. I know it's tagged with release numbers.
It is a published draft. It's listed. It's, in fact, the only thing that is listed on the official W3C page currently as in that category.
Okay, thank you. I'm hoping this diagram helps clarify things. I know for me personally, I was even having a hard time keeping the types straight. There may be better ways to represent this, but I'm hoping this is a good start, and especially if we add links to the detailed parts, it will clarify it. Now, there's a bigger point that I have to get back to that we talked about last time. I'll get to the queue in just one second, which is that, okay, this is still a lot to know, and we don't want everyone to have to know these details. We're hoping that this helps at least explain it for those people who do need to know, which might include chairs, because frankly, until I drew this, I didn't really understand it. So now I think I understand more. So we have this, but then also that this helps us understand the transition so that, you know, in the interest of broadening inclusion, you know, note that, again, this still hasn't solved the problem of it seeming to be a very GitHub-centric process. So this will also help us understand what are the areas that opportunities to help to improve a sort of broaden contributions. Lastly, before getting to the queue, I wanted to call it a specific thing. So notice in the community report draft side of the state diagram, so there's the rough draft part, and it transitions to an unreleased draft as soon as the editors decide to move to GitHub. So that part's really interesting because we've had cases. So for very technical specs, you know, like the DID spec for which we need very tight version control, you know, GitHub is a way to get that, you know, very specific tracking. I've noticed that for other types of community reports, like Amira or DID Primer even, it's been fairly natural for a lot of the iteration to happen in, say, Google Docs. And my thought is that for these types of work items that would be less, you know, quote unquote, technical in nature, we might be able to get away with doing a lot of that iteration in, you know, Google Docs or, you know, some format where the authors are more comfortable, they're not having to work in GitHub, and sort of front-loading that effort in, you know, outside of GitHub. And then through a combination of tools and, you know, whatever community support, which we'll talk about a little bit later, you know, we can sort of help guide those work items through the process, meaning that in theory, not everyone has to be a GitHub or Git expert to contribute. Those are my rough thoughts on it. And so let me, before moving on, let's get to the queue. Dimitri, you're up.
Yes, my question is, so I get the process for establishing a new registry on the one side and community reports on another. What about an item in the registry, like, for example, the DID web specification, where the ask is the CCG to provide a GitHub repo for it and for the specs process to be inside. So would that be counted as a community report?
The process by which that happens. So that gets back to the issue that Christopher came up. I think that meta process might be a community report. The meta process of registries, but then also the process by which, you know, maybe if the registries decide to deviate from that, also might be a report. I'm hoping, so that we don't process ourselves to death, I'm sort of hoping that, you know, that might fall out naturally from this other W3C effort, but I think we don't really know the answer, but Christopher's on the queue to talk about that.
Yeah,
Can I jump to you, Manu, and let Christopher talk to that?
Absolutely.
Okay. Christopher, you're up.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think there are two different issues here, Dimitri. One is the actual registry change. And right now, I mean, we're still working on that, but if, you know, if it meets the requirements of the registry and the registry editors say, yes, you can add this method spec to the method spec registry, then that's satisfied. Now there's the separate issue of, is this going to be a work, you know, is this method going to be a CCG work item? So first off, anybody can do a method registry without being a CCG work item. So, in fact, most are. So they will not actually reside in the CCG community repo, things of that nature. So they would, you know, need, if they wish it to be a community specification, they have to go through the work item process. So if it's DID sovereign, DID Veris 1, it's probably not going to go through the CCG process. But if it's something like DID peer, or maybe DID BTCR, where it is considered much more of a community thing rather than a particular company thing, then they can do whatever they want. They can, they just have to, list their URL in the, in the registry. Does that answer your question?
So just to be specific, So I get about external specs, but for specs that want to be part of the CCG umbrella that have a GitHub repo under the CCG namespace, they go through the work item workflow, and specifically the community report side of the workflow?
That's right. Yes.
That's right.
Okay.
And for that work item specifically, all of this stuff, background work we've been doing, is to make sure we're all on the same page so that we can start flushing things through, because I'm sure you've all noticed there's been a few proposed work items like that one just sort of stuck. And so we need to start moving forward. And so anything like that, we're not expecting, you know, people to necessarily magically know how that affects their work item. We're going to be sort of coaching some things through, and also hoping that by working through some specific examples, it might make things a lot clearer in general. Manu, you're up.
Right. So this was back on a comment that you made about Google Docs. You know, I think we're probably to the point, and we've heard enough people with concerns about how the whole GitHub process that we have is exclusionary to a certain degree, right? I mean, it's evident in the types of contributions that we have. Largely, it's folks that have some kind of technical background that are contributing to the technical specifications. And even in the technical specifications have large swaths that are not technical in nature. We're just trying to explain things a bit better. So we may want to really put some focus on the tooling that helps us convert Google Docs to respec documents and make that process a bit easier. I mean, to date, I think there's just been like one or two people that have worked on that program to do it, and I don't think that they've put in a tremendous amount of time. So anything that we can do to transition kind of the editing cycle more to Google Docs for as long as possible until potentially we get to the final report stage, right? I think that may help us get more comments and suggestions and input from more people than the peer respec documents have gotten to date. So anyway, I just wanted to point that out as like something that we should probably focus on. And if there's someone new to the group or someone that has the ability or has done, you know, programming against Google Docs, we could really use help polishing off that tool chain because it will have a really good positive impact on people's ability to contribute in the CCG. And that's it.
Yes. So thank you for teeing that up, because the next thing I wanted to mention is that Bill Barnhill has been taking a look at it. I paste the issue here, and so he started looking into the tool. And Bill, if it looks like something you would want some more help on, please speak up. But yes, I think that this is absolutely one of the critical pieces to getting. To addressing the concerns that the GitHub process is very exclusionary. Christopher, you're up.
Yeah, I wanted to speak to. I mean, I am hoping that there'll be, you know, good volunteer effort to make the tooling better and whatever. But until that time, there's nothing that says that something can't move from unreleased draft to not final report, but the stage short of that, all at once at the end of, you know, whatever time it's spent as an unreleased. So, you know, I can definitely see something, like Amira or some other document that, especially community commentaries that are not intended to be, you know, have the IPR stuff that some of the others do, that they could be done as a Google Doc, and then at some point they say, hey, we're basically done. We need a respec person to help us make sure it's, you know, proper and respec. They do that in a week. We move, you know, they say it's ready to, the editors say it's ready for a for a version number, boom, a version number is put on there. They basically, you know, tell the group, we're ready to say that this is a, that this ought to be published. The, you know, we publish it, you know, and in a week or two, you know, it's up and running as a community commentary that is published. The final step, the report one, is one we need to be careful on. It's, you know, but again, that probably can be done in a short period as well. So things can be in that first stage where it's purely in a Google Doc for a long time. It's perfectly acceptable. That's it.
Yes, thanks for calling that out. So, yes, absolutely. Even before the tooling is in place, it's a good opportunity for people to collaborate and contribute, you know, pairing someone with, you know, someone who does understand Git to work with someone else, and, you know, that can help move these along. I noticed that I'm going to keep working through the queue. I'm glad that we're able to discuss this. This is really important to kind of get more eyes on, because in the following weeks, we're going to be talking about, at least in some way, work item repair and discussing the proposed work items. So we'll be moving through that. Because we have a few people in the queue and we only have 3 minutes left, I'm going to assume we won't get to those today. Let's see. So I think, okay. Tall Ted, you're up.
Yeah, 3 minutes is an awfully short window, and I'm a little frustrated at this moment with the way the discussion has been going. Setting aside the conduct of the discussion, I am surprised, to say the least, that this group, given the tone of a great many calls, is advocating Google Docs as the place to do things. A, Google, put everything in Google's hands, not great. B, Google Docs, to my knowledge, do not have a useful way of comparing version X with version Y. So you can't really see what changes were made over any given time frame since your last time looking at the thing. Wikispace is available on both the W3 servers and the GitHub servers, and allow for that tracking and that change viewing and a whole bunch of features that just ain't there in Google Docs.
Yeah, and actually I can speak to this. No reason to get stressed out, because I think that we were using Google Docs as a surrogate. That's why I was backing off of it a few times, because I know a lot of us have the concerns about centralized, you know, using Google, right? That would be a sort of strange default for this group. I think the main thing is that until now, no one's really proposed a good alternative. So being constructive here, what we need is for people to propose what is a good collaboration tool for you know, a broad range of people. We've not had that until or we've not had any sort of consensus on it. So anyone, whoever is, you know, Tall Ted, anyone who's piling onto that, please propose an alternative and, you know, work with the group to see if they will actually be able to use it. Take it on yourselves to make this happen. Let me see if anyone else is on the queue. Manu, you're up.
Yeah, so Ted, I have the same issues with putting everything in Google, and it's a fight I've been losing for many, many years. I think we could look at it as an editing tool, and as long as we have a regular export feature, like export every single day, it mitigates the concern, like export to various different open formats, it mitigates at least the concern that we're locking everything into Google. I think, so that's the first point. The second point is, you know, we're already locked into Microsoft with GitHub, right? I mean, it's like, which set of evils do we want to pick? Not saying that any particular choice is evil or not, I'm just saying that, you know, we're in the same predicament right now. And I think what we could do, what we're trying to do is maximize how people can contribute. we've been hearing Google Docs, Google Docs, Google Docs for a while now. And I think that there's a way to enable that to happen while preserving the stuff outside of the Google ecosystem, making regular snapshots, et cetera. Anyway, I think there are ways to do this. The W3C wiki, I think, has been a non-starter for a variety of different people. People find it really difficult to learn wiki syntax, to get an account on the system, to log in. So, you know,
I mean, not for nothing, but if you can't jump through some hoops, you have to jump through some hoops, right? If you're making contributions through Google Docs,
so
if you don't have a Google account, it doesn't show up.
So
you have to register with Google.
So, okay, I have to close the call because we're over time. And let's continue this over the mailing list. So, again, please propose constructive, usable alternatives. This is a good community discussion to have. Okay, thanks, everyone.